You're now tuned in to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Today's guest, Cheryl the Pearl, Shabba Dude Ozone. Enjoy the show.
Hello out there. Welcome to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And we're really rolling today. We've got our second show and nothing but legendary iconic figures from hip hop telling their stories and for history, because this is the only genre of music where some of the founders are still living, male and female. And we've got one of the originators. If you want to go back as far as you want to go back into hip hop, as far as recorded music is concerned, this lady and her two friends were one of the first, probably the first female rap group in hip hop. Actually, before it was even called hip hop. So she's got a unique story to tell of what's been happening with her and her friends since then. And her name is Cheryl the Pearl, okay, from the group Sequence. She's got a lot going on in her life. Cheryl, are you with me?
Yes, I am, and thank you for inviting me to your show. I appreciate
We want to welcome you. I'm going to shut up. I'm going to let you talk, but I just want to give you some guidelines because people want to hear your whole story.
Okay.
I myself was surprised a few years ago to see you on Facebook because you always wonder, what happened to so-and-so? What happened? You know, we don't have Jet and Ebony magazine anymore to keep us informed like they used to. You know what I'm saying? So we have the internet now. Okay, so you got a beautiful story, Cheryl the Pearl, on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Go on, Cheryl.
Okay, I started in 1979 with my group, The Sequence. We're the first female rap group to be on Wax. And over the years, there's been, you know, a lot of female groups that have stepped up to the plate, and they were there back then. They just didn't beat us to Wax. We just got that chance before anyone else at Sugar Hill Records.
And you weren't from New York City.
No, we were not from New York City. We no idea what was going on in New York. From Columbia, South Carolina. So all we heard was, the first rap record we heard was from the Fatback Band with King Tim III, and we heard Lady B out of Philadelphia, and then we heard the Sugar Hill Gang. And
what
then,
years? What years? What years were these influences?
1979.
Beautiful. Okay, you heard those.
1979. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's no internet. There's no,
no internet,
video, so you couldn't even see those groups.
No.
But you hear the records. Okay.
You can only hear the records on the radio. And before them, Disco Daddy, it was Parliament Funkadelic. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a big fan of George Clinton.
They had
P-Funk out.
Right.
Good evening. Right. Do not attempt to adjust this radio. There is nothing wrong. That is where I got the rap style from.
Really?
I played that record so much, my mother and my sister and them, they hid it from me. I would put the needle on the record and push it back until I could say every word that he was saying. And so we were cheerleaders at our school, and so me and Angie used to write cheers for our school, and then we heard the Sugar Hill Gang was coming to South Carolina to the Township Auditorium. So me and Angie had been already writing songs and putting things together, and I wrote the hook of Funk You Up. I think I was like 16 or 17 years old because besides George, I was a Bootsy Collins fan as well. Bootsy was doing his thing. And Bootsy had been coming in and out, and this girl said, well, she was dating him when he came to South Carolina. I said, well, I'm going to write something for him. And I started writing that hook really for Bootsy to hear, but he never got a chance to hear it.
Yeah.
And so when we met Ms. Robinson at the Township Auditorium, first we couldn't get in. we was promised passes that was not there. And wow. Harold Miles, God bless his soul, Harold saw us standing out there telling the people, we're supposed to be in, we got to get in, you know, we got to get back there. And so he came to the door, and he said, what's going on with y'all? And he was an older man, of course, and he had the Sugar Hill jacket on. So we're like, we're supposed to get back there. We're supposed to have backstage passes. You know, nobody won't let us in. And he said, he was looking at Andy because I like that little chocolate thing right there. So Andy said, well, if you get me, he was flirting with Andy. So Andy said, if you get me in, you got to get my girls in. He said, all three of y'all, come on. And then as we were walking to the backstage part of the auditorium, we was telling him that we sing and we rap and we need somebody to hear us. So he said, come on. And he introduced us to Nate Edmonds, God bless his soul. Nate was telling us to send a cassette, send a tape, and giving us the address. We was like, now, somebody got to hear us now. And so Miss Robinson, Sylvia Robinson, was sitting back there in the room. And we like, what could be those boys rapping? You got to hear us, you know. I mean, really expressing ourselves to try to get anybody to hear us. And she said, sitting in the corner, she said, I'll listen to y'all.
Wow.
And, you know, and we was like.
That right there. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you've got to, I'm sure you've thought about it many times, but how fortunate is that? Three cheerleaders from South Carolina. Make it backstage to a concert, but Sylvia Robinson, who started, for people out there who don't know the history, started Sugar Hill Records, is standing in the room. And listen,
there.
It's nice to listen to you guys. Go ahead.
She had been on the bus with the guy. She had her Sugar Hill jacket on and her cap on, and she didn't have any makeup on. So, of course, I'm a big fan of Sylvia Robinson and Pillow Talk. So, but I still didn't recognize her.
Pillow Talk cover. She's always got her makeup and all that. But she probably looked the same.
So I didn't recognize her. So and then even the name didn't even hit me, you know. And so we started singing, and we were singing, and we were singing songs that we wrote. And it didn't quite hit her. And on our way out, I said, well, we need to sing Funk You Up to her. And she said, come on back in and sing it. And we started, funk you right on up. We're going to funk you right on up. Get up, sit back down. And she said, don't say no more. She sent for the band members, which was Doug Wimplish, I think, and Keith LeBlanc and Skip McDonald. She told them to come in, Sugar Hill Gang Band members to come in. And she said, start singing. She said, y'all say y'all rap, right? And y'all rap. We said, yes, ma'am. She started singing that hook again, and we started singing. And then the bass came in, and the guitar started playing, and the drummer was beating on. I think he was beating on the wall. And we started singing. Then she said, Blondie, you come in. And Gwen said, my name is Gwen, but they call me Blondie. I'm better than she hadn't heard the rest, so we started singing them. And she said, oh, my God. And she said, Cheryl, you come in. They call me Cheryl. I tell you why, because I got the sexy bedroom time. And then she said, Angie, you come in. Say, Angie, B is the what they say. I got chocolate. It's in the Milky Way. And everybody backstage ran to that room because it became like a jam session. Nobody wanted to stop, but it was time
that
for the Sugar Hill Gang.
That is the most amazing, sir. I'm sorry. I'm going to let you continue, but that is the most amazing hip-hop story. And I've interviewed a lot of hip-hop artists that I have ever heard in my life. That's a hell of a movie moment, if you can see that scene in the movie.
You can see
Well, I'm glad you're on the show telling that story, because that is one of the most amazing hip-hop discovery stories I've ever heard. You got a hell of a story. Go ahead, sister.
Straight out of high school. And then it was time for the Sugar Hill Gang to go on stage, and she was so excited about us. And we went on the stage. We asked, can we go on the stage with them? Because now we're in South Carolina and all of our friends are out there in the audience. So now we need to hit that stage so they can see us. We done told them we was coming. She said, yeah, y'all go out there. Go on out there. And I loved her attitude about it. And she watched us on stage performing with Sugar Hill Gang. And everybody in the audience, everybody from South Carolina, is like, they on stage with the Sugar Hill Gang. Oh, my God. You know, that was the talk of the town. Everybody in our school, oh, we got crazy respect and love behind that one. And at the end of the night, she said, I'm going to stand for you girls, and I'm going to make you stars. Those were her words. And we looked at her, and we like, I wonder if she's playing or not, you know, because people tell you things and they don't really do it, you know. But there was a look in her face when they were leaving, and she turned and said it again. She said, you're going to be stars. She said, I'm going to send for y'all next Thursday. I'm going to send you tickets there next Thursday, and Friday y'all get on the plane. Make sure you got your ID. Now we got to go back home and explain to our parents what the ladies get ready to do for us. I went to my grandmother because my grandmother has had the final say. So, you know, even though my mother was like, I don't think she goes, my mother said, let her go. If it doesn't work, then she can always come back home. And my grandfather.
So none of you were 18 at the time for signing for yourself.
I was 18. Now, the thing is with the sequence is, the night that we got discovered was Blondie's birthday. Blondie was 19, turning 20 that October the 20th.
Oh, okay.
On my birthday is when we heard our record on the radio. I was 18, turning 19, November the 19th. And when we met up with the Sugar Hill Gang in Charleston, South Carolina, it was on Angie's birthday, which she turned 18 December the 18th.
So you were able to sign the contracts yourself then at that age. Okay.
Yes. And our family.
Fortunate is that. I mean, you know, it's like the stars are lined up for you all the way down, just a yellow brick road for you all to walk down, all the way to New York.
That. Yes, 5-2, 5-3, 5-4. We just had the combination there. Mm-hmm. And Angie was 17 when we signed. So, you know, that's, you know, so many years ago, but she was 17 going on 18. And we had to talk her moms into letting her go. And Blondie said, I'm 20, I'm going. You know, it's like, I'm going to leave y'all. So my mom, my grandfather gave me $100 and said, if it don't work, get on the bus and come back home. But also had relatives that lived in East Orange, New Jersey at the time, my aunts and uncles.
Right.
So if things didn't go right, then I was to call them, and they would come and get us. And I think Angie had family in Brooklyn. Her aunt lived in Brooklyn. But our first time really being alone in a state with people that we really don't know, but they want to record us. So we got on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the airport. Harold, the same guy that met us at the door, picked us up at the airport. We went to the studio, met Ms. Robinson at the studio, and the band was in there rehearsing the song. She gave us $100 apiece, told us to go get something to eat, and drop our luggage off at the hotel and come back. And so we go to McDonald's with $100 bill, each of us. And we want 2-all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, chicken onions on a separate feed bar. Everybody looking at us like, what are they in here with $100 bills for a Big Mac?
But you're in the big time now, though. You're in the big time. And you guys go in. What was the creative process like? Did you have to? She wanted, obviously, the same song. But she probably was more ready with the band members now because she had heard the hook and everything. So how did that play out when you go back
once
and start recording?
Once we went back to the studio, we went in and we rehearsed with the band. the Sugar Hill Band, and they basically had it down. In fact, they're professionals. And so we were singing it down for them, and then they started recording the track first. So as we're singing to them, they're recording the track. And once they finish, and you know, at back then we was doing 6, 7, 8 minute tracks. You know what I'm saying? Because once you got in the groove of everything, you didn't want to stop the music from playing. So you know, you'll notice that the Sugar Hill long version of Rapper's Delight is 14 minutes or something. And I think Funk You Up is like 6, 7, or 8 minutes. It's very long. And so they did their parts. And then they came back in and they did touch-ups where they needed to do touch-ups. Then they needed for us to put the vocals on it so that the band could come in and whatever they felt in and out of there they could do. So we did the vocals. She was very, very happy. She had this big old pretty smile on her face. And everybody was just so happy. And we went in at 8 o'clock that night. It was like 12 or 1 o'clock the next day when we got out. But everything was basically done that night, the touch-ups and everything. But she told us to go get some rest, and they would pick us up around 6 or 7, and we would come back because of some of the things that she wanted to do. And I was like, what else can they do? It's basically that, you know. But that's young and not really knowing the production side of it, of what a producer hears that can make it even better. So Keith LeBlanc came back in the next day, and the little sounds would hear, boom, 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 boom. He came in with that, the drummer. Boom, boom, boom. And then one of the other guys, his name was Flip at the time, he came in and said, sit your booty down, which made it interesting. Okay. And when we had to do the hand claps.
Oh, please. Okay, I know. With that bad friend, we... the studio. That's the hardest thing. Most people take that for granted. It's the most monotonous, and it's the hardest thing because if one person do it, and one person's off, you know, you got to sort of tighten up on it. But then the hand clap. So that was the last thing that you added besides the.
That was the last thing we had to do because you know there weren't any mechanical hand claps back then.
Right.
You had to do
it yourself.
No, I
did mine in 1980, 81. Yeah, we did them again. That's work.
Okay. So you
most
know.
Of the people out there in radio land, if you ever record a record with hand claps, now if you try to do them by hand, you understand why these artists that we're talking to, these iconic legends, put work in, not just on the stage when you saw them in person, but in the studio. Okay?
Right.
So that's why we illuminate that process. So you guys cut the record, and at that point, the record is done. It's still a dream, however. So what has it progressed to, radio airplay and all of that?
Once Ms. Robinson mastered it and sent it to the master company and they sent the plates back, she sent it to Mr. Frankie Crocker at WBLS and Mr. Magic at that time. We went and we did an interview with Mr. Frankie Crocker at WBLS. And him and Andy's birthday is December 18th. God bless his soul. But he did open that door for us to come in and do that, and which he really didn't
he
like
was
it
the
for
man.
That time. But he was the man was in the New man. York.
Yes, he was.
And
He's my idol. He's why I became a DJ. I grew up in New York.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then we went to see Mr. Magic. God bless his soul. He passed on also. And we did the interview with Mr. Magic. And I met Jaleel from Houdini with Mr. Magic. He was an intern there at that time.
Wow.
And then we got homesick, and we wanted to go back home.
Of course.
So we came back home after being up there for a couple of weeks. And when we heard it on the radio at WOIC, was the radio station at the time, when we heard it on the radio, everybody called each other, it's on the radio. It's on the radio. We heard it. I said, oh, my God, turn the radio on. Call Gwen, turn the radio. So we were all on the phone while the music was playing.
I did feel it, too, It's magic.
Yeah.
It's a magic feeling. Yes, it is.
Yeah, so we just was like, so happy. Our friends was hearing it. Our family was hearing it. And they know that, you know, something big was getting ready to happen for us. And so after a month of hearing it down there, you know, the churches came up against it, and they didn't want it played on the radio.
Really?
So, yes.
Really?
Yes, they didn't really like
it. And there's no bad words in hip-hop at this point, the time you record your record, which is 1980. Nobody's doing the B-words or the N-words. What was the problem?
I think when we were saying funk you up, the kids were saying something else.
Okay, I see. Little semantic thing. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
it wasn't really anything. Okay.
Yes.
But that's interesting.
Yes, and so, but they still played it for a little while, and then the nightclubs picked up, and that was it. Once the clubs picked up, it was gone. Yeah, it was out the card. And then, like I said, we met the Sugar Hill Gang in Charleston, South Carolina. We did that show with them, and our whole family drove down with us to see us off. After that show, we got on the bus with the Sugar Hill Gang. And we traveled with them for, I think, 6 months to a year. We were on and off. We would go out. But we never got back home for a long time after that. We went.
Wow.
We would go everywhere they went. And they was teaching us how to be on the stage and be professional. And to master the craft.
Work the ground, everything.
And so we were on for a long time before Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, the Funky Four Plus One, the Treacherous Three, the Crash Crew, Spoony G, Busy B, Wayne and Charlie, the Mean Machine, which were the first Puerto Rican rappers at that time. The whole clique, Kevin Kev, all of us traveled together. It was like three buses that they put us on, and we hit the road. We hit the road. I think we traveled. We worked off of Funk You Up for 2 years.
I know you did. Okay.
Hey,
did you go overseas? Did you go overseas to get a chance to do any of that?
We only went to Canada. We didn't get to go to the other places. The Sugar Hill Gang basically opened up that door for Flash and the rest of them to be able to go over there. But at that time, we didn't get to go. So people are still waiting to see the sequence over there.
Okay.
You know, and you know, Angie now is Angie Stone, but she's the original Angie B from the sequence. And every now and when her and Blondie travel over there, Blondie was telling me, she said, sure, Angie got the hottest record on the map, but they're coming to us to get autographs from the sequence work. Mm-hmm. And some of them got me and Angie's autographs, but they waiting on you to come so that they can get yours. And I was like, for real? The good thing about, you know? She said,
well, let me ask you. Let me ask you. You know, now you're a mature artist that overseas, all black groups that are taken for granted here now would be megastars over there. So is there any talk of reuniting to do a European tour, Japan or Europe or places where you know you would be booked, you know what I'm saying, and be welcome? Have you guys thought about that?
I talked to Blondie and Angie about a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying something about China. And but I haven't heard anything else back from them of whether we were going to do that or not.
Keep us informed. Please keep us informed.
Yeah.
You got fans here who would love to see that. Even if you only did occasional get-togethers for specific things, you know what I'm saying? Because maybe all of you now, like myself, I'm a grandfather. I spend time touring. It's not something I really would like to get locked into, but for certain dates, 3 or 4 dates here or there, you know what I'm saying? Or positive city, something like that, a special thing where you know in advance that the promoter has already got you sold out there. Bam.
Right.
You know, something, let us know if it happens.
I think once it presents itself, we will do it. We'll probably, you know, talk about and discuss it. And we will do it. I know Angie is working on a new album right now. And I have a new single out there, in which they said it's doing very good in London. in London, in Brazil, in China, and Australia.
Tell us about this new project. I'm going to take you back after this, but tell us about the new project and Rhythm Change right now while we're in the middle of our conversation.
Well, you know, when I stepped out of the industry many years ago, I stepped away because I had to come back and take care of my grandparents. And my sisters, you know, between the two of them had five kids, which were babies at the time. And my grandfather said, please make sure these kids come up. So I ended up staying home, being auntie mom and helping my sisters with the kids. And mama and my grandmother and grandfather passed on. And but I was still recording. And
okay.
So I had this song called Rhythm Change that I did with a producer here in South Carolina. I call him L.A., but his name is Lamont Kennedy. And me and him would go in and we would record Rhythm Change.
Mm-hmm.
And I did Got Love and I Don't Feel Like Talking, two other songs that I'll be releasing. And Lonnie and I did On Our Way to the Movies. But I kept holding on to my music and doing my research on the industry and actually watching all of the awards, watching where they were going at with the music. And I decided that, you know, I write, sing, rap, and produce. I'm going to be on some rap stuff, too. But I wanted to put the song out of mine called Rhythm Change.
Okay.
And I went to Facebook first with it. And I just started getting such great response from it. And you know, a lot of people that was in radio and doing things kept saying, sure, can I get it? Can I play it on my radio station? I said, of course. So I would send it to anyone who asked for it. And I have a record pool that I work with, a couple of them that I work with, and they start pushing it. And then think about 2 weeks ago, it was number four on the charts, on the urban hip-hop Latin charts, and number two on the indie charts. And this week here, it went up to number three on the urban hip-hop Latin charts. So I'm
Where can they, your fans and people who are just learning about you, go to purchase your music right now?
It's in iTunes and Apple's. It should be on any of the online stores. They put it in all of the online stores.
Pearl of Pearl, Rhythm Change. Okay, now I do want to take you back. You had a glory fairy tale beginning with Sugar Hill Records. It took some twists and turns. Can you elaborate on any of that and give some advice to young people getting into this business?
Okay. What I would say there, you know, as you know, we were kids and we had no business sense, I put it like that, because we're coming straight out of high school. And the paperwork that we signed kind of binded us up to the point where the publishing from the song, we never really got anything from that. So we're in the courtrooms. We're going to be going to, I guess, to try to lawyers. We lawyered up now. And this is years later after seeing so many people touch our music and no money coming in.
Okay.
So, and even Bruno Mars, I got two, Funk You Up and Apache. Apache was the song I wrote with the Sugar Hill Gang. They have those two songs on Uptown Funk You Up. Jennifer Lopez used Eighth Wonder, which I was a part of Eighth Wonder and one of the writers on that song as well.
Wow.
And this song called I'm Gonna Be Alright. So Master P has used Eighth Wonder sample. Make them say, na 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 na. That sample comes from some of my work, Busta Rhymes, Woo-ha, I got them all in check. That's some of my work from the Sugar Hill Gang, Eighth Wonder. And people are constantly touching the old music, which keeps me alive and make me say, okay, well, if they touch that, they better get ready for round two because I'm loaded. The song they hear now, Rhythm Change, is 8 years old.
Wow. Okay.
I just hold them, you know?
Right on.
Yeah.
Now, is there any further thoughts on an album or project besides what we talked about, possible reunion, possibly with the girls from Sequence? But any, what basically, what do you want to do as a solo career artist? What are your goals?
Yeah, I'm working on an album now. The name of my label is Black Bottom Entertainment, so all of my music would come through my label. I've opened a label up for new artists to come through, and I have some really, really great people that's got great music that I'm going to be pushing out there. I do 50-50 deals on record sales and merchandise. People keep their publishing. I'm not interested in that, nor do I manage anyone. They just submit the music to blackbottoment@yahoo.com. I listen to it, and if they got something, you know, we work it out and we go with it, you know, all the way out with it. So, yeah, I'm going to be doing a lot of my work. I think I'm going to work till I turn 60, then I'm going to retire. Come out to California with y'all that.
What's up? I'm not gonna give my age away, but I'm still cooking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I mean, you do what you love.
And you know what, Disco? That I hate when they put an age limit on music. I don't like that.
Yeah. Right.
I don't like that. I want to hear Gladys Knight. I want to hear Millie Jackson. I want to hear Miss Aretha Franklin. I want to hear them, even if they don't travel the world like they used to when they were younger.
No.
I want to hear their voices.
Yes, because they are more than
Diana Ross. I want to hear Shaka Khan. I want to hear those the real gut music.
I got you. Quincy Jones, 90-something years old, tell him he can't make music anymore.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah,
they don't do that with the Rolling Stone and some of those great groups.
Oh, heck no. My man looking like he stepped out of the coffin, Nick Jagger. He's still selling out concerts.
He's still selling out concerts. So why should they stifle our people?
Exactly.
And then they holler, grown people don't have concerts for grown people to go. Well, then let the grown people get back out there. The ones that want to go out there and work, let them work. Quit that box sign on that stop sign to saying we don't want you no more. Because that's what that says to me, and that makes me want to get it, want to really dig in and let you know I'm going to do what I do. I am who I am. You're not going to stop me. You can only open the doors and let me come through. If not, I'm going in every hood and sell my music.
On that note, you heard from Sean the Pearl, a very assertive queen.
I'm not afraid of it, you know.
There you go. She's about to get her. Right on. And we want your legal problems to straighten out to benefit you and the ladies, because we all know some of the horror stories of the early beginnings. We all had stars in our eyes.
Right.
I got stories to tell too, all right, similar to yours. So, you know, I appreciate artist to artist your contribution, Cheryl the Pearl, the hip hop and the ladies sequence, okay, your place in history. Period.
Thank you.
I appreciate. Okay, because for females in any profession, you've got a forgive the pun, a hard row to hoe. Okay, you know what I'm saying. You're from the country, so you know I'm not meaning it in the way that they would take it in the city. You know, there people work with farm implements, and you get on some roads that dirt is just that always gonna go through. I've been in West Virginia for the summers. I'm from New York, but I go down there. My grandmother would put us to work in the back. I learned how to use all the sickle and stuff like that to cut weeds, things they don't even use anymore. So I appreciate the work that you guys put in. You know what I'm saying? And I'm glad and appreciative that you decided to do our show.
I tell the young people to do your homework. Don't just walk in head first and get your neck chopped off, you know. Go
there
in knowing what you're dealing with and what you want out of it, not what somebody else wants for you and your career. It's your life, you know. And sometimes when we get in with these companies, they start making decisions on what they want you to do instead of what you do. Stay true to yourself and your craft. And live your life, you know.
Okay.
Don't get sidetracked. Don't walk in the traps because, you know there's the good, the bad, and the ugly with the industry. Thank God, you know, that we're out. We didn't get caught up in the drug game. We didn't get caught up into, you know, anything that could hurt us. We just was living life. And as Angie went on, we supported Angie and Blondie and I support. And we're still sisters in this hip-hop game. And every now and then when people attack us, you'll see all three of us get on Facebook and go in. But, you know, because we're not going to step down out of our position.
That's right.
As the first rap group with an original rap record that sold 500,000 copies in 3 weeks, we're not, and without social media, without any of the other stuff that they got today,
we're going to stand
our grounds, and we stand firm with that. For the other ladies out there that didn't get the opportunity to stand, you know, to get in the ring, they made contributions to their communities, and they have their own set of fans in their communities. We were a community group too. We did talent shows. We did everything that, you know, that was there for us to be able to, platforms for us to step out there to say we want to do something, you know, but. You know, like I know, once you step into the professional arena and it becomes professional, that outside of you, just the state that you're living in, the whole world hear your music. So we're the first female rap group to do what we did in the history of hip hop.
And y'all did it. Sir, I want to thank you again, and we want to welcome you back sometime in the future when your movie of your life is being made and filmed, okay? So we'll do an interview with you on the set, okay? We'll be interviewing you on the set of your film.
You can call me anytime.
Thank you, Cheryl. And God bless you, sister.
God bless you. Thank y'all.
Thank you. You've been listening to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop, Cheryl the Pearl from the group Sequence, Sugar Hill Records, one of the most iconic figures and really one of the most amazing discovery stories I've ever heard in the history of hip hop. Thank you. This is Disco Daddy. I'm out.
Hello. I'm Robin Lynn Maven, the CEO, creator, and producer of Vibes Live. We have over 2 million geographical listeners reaching 200 countries with nonstop music 24/7. Just tune in on VibesLive.com.
'Welcome to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And we have a very special guest on our show today, probably the most well-known locker, street dancer. I'm going to let him define himself. But in those categories, he's probably one of the best-known personalities in the world and the best at what he does. His name is Shabadoo. And you might know him from the films Breaking 1 and 2. And other work that he's done. He's one of the most iconic figures in hip-hop, not just West Coast, but in hip-hop period worldwide. He's recognized worldwide as one of the originators of the, with the Don Campbell, of the Lockers street dance crew, but they also started on Soul Train, the show Don Cornelius created back in the early 70s, and this is where he springs from. We're going to be getting into his life, his career, and what he's presently doing now, because the brother is still very active. Mr. Shabadoo, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
You did say some really nice compliments, and I appreciate it. And you said
you would allow me
to define myself, and I'll take a minute to do that. I see myself as an ordinary man living an extraordinary life. And I am extremely grateful to be able to do the things that I love to do and bring joy to people and enlighten people all over the world. So in that way, that's who I really think I am. And that's what I would want to be said on my stone when I leave.
Yeah, well, let's hope this is a long way off. But let's start with the early development of your career. Where were you born, and how you ended up coming to Los Angeles before you got on Soul Train? Let's go into that period of your early life.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I started my life. I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, born in the Cook County Hospital. to my mom and dad. My mom is Ruth, and my dad is Adolfo. She's of African, Ethiopian heritage, and my dad was Puerto Rican. I moved out to California. The family did. My mom did. After I was involved with some, you know, street gangs, and my mom had become a Jehovah's Witness and wanted to really start a new life, she relocated us to California about circa 1971. And we moved in with my cousin in Orange County, my cousin Kenneth, who was a staff sergeant stationed at the El Toro base. And a happenstance meeting at a black student union contest held at Fullerton College led to a lifelong relationship and friendship with Campbell Locke Jr., who was one of the co-founding members of the Lockers. Okay. So that was my beginning. Here in Los Angeles, I danced well before that. I've been dancing since I was like 3 or 4 years old. And and here I am today.
Okay. Now, your stint with the Lockers. Now, you, at the time that they broke out, how did that happen? How did you guys form the group? And basically, and I know a little bit about the history, but I'm going to let you tell the tale. How did you guys all get together and then choose who was going to be a Locker to complete their unit that I've seen perform on various shows with Carol Burnett back in the day? How did that come about?
Well, it was kind of a farming system that sort of happened, and I want to let people out there know that locking was all over Los Angeles at this point, and we as the Lockers, the founding members, really came from...
What year? Okay, that's very important.
This was about the fall or spring of 73. In the fall of 72 or so, we were doing some lightweight shows here in L.A. We did a news program for Channel 4. We did a hatch show. Some members, before it was formed, we were formally assembled as the Lockers, did the Roberta Flack television special with Donnie Hathaway. And it was choreographed by Tony Basil and staged by Tony Basil. And Tony had a relationship and friendship with Don Campbell Locke. And it was kind of Tony, I think it was Tony's idea that we'd be, you know, that the Lockers, the Campbell Lockers was our first name, the Campbell Lockers would be comprised of the best of the best. So we were like an all-star team, basically. We were the best
Campbell
of
Lockers,
Pardon?
Did they precede the Lockers, the Campbell Lockers?
Oh, no. No, we were the Campbell Lockers. That was our first name.
I got you. Okay.
Yeah, and so as the Campbell Lockers, before we were formed, Tony's idea was to get the best of the best that was out there, even though we had different affiliations, and we didn't particularly like each other, per se, but she said, and convinced us all that, hey, it's in our best interest, and the interest of the dance, that we come together and squash whatever differences we had and come together. And that's exactly what happened. We came together, and that fateful night was at SIR, what's called the Studio Instrument Rentals on Sunset Boulevard. At Studio Instrument Rentals, we were formed officially as the Lockers. I would say 73, it was officially. That all-star team was Don Campbell, Campbell, Tony Basil, Fred Berry, we call him Mr. Penguin, Bill Williams, Slim the Robot, Fluky Luke, Leo Williamson II, Dave Gregory Pope, known as Campbell Locke Jr., and myself. Here we are some, 45-plus years later.
And still going strong, because I've seen some videos of Tony. She's out there still dancing also. Now, you went from the locking group into films, probably the most well-known being Breaking One and Two. But how did that happen? How did you transform from, had you done any acting, first of all, I'm going to ask you before you even did the film, and how did that process happen? Did you have a connection? Did you have to audition? How did that come about, the film Breaking One, which actually opened up your career?
Well, I had, well, Breaking, it was a kind of a 1-2-3 punch by the time Breaking came along. About circa 1977, Tony Basil had left the group already and pursuing a recording career. Fred Berry, Mr. Penguin, went on to portray Rerun on the show What's Happening. And that kind of left me with the managerial duties. And at that point, I was really managing and leading the group. We had a meeting at my in my garage while we were rehearsing for the Dick Van Dyke special. And the guys, Calvin Locke Jr., approached Don and said, you know, we want Shabba-Doo to be the manager. We want him to lead the group, and we want to make it official. And, of course, that didn't sit well with Don. And Don, you know, after a few expletives, told me to go form my own group. I should get out and form my own group. And I took his advice, and I said, well, after the Dick Van Dyke show, that I would go solo. When I said that, Campbell Locke Jr. said, if Shabba-Doo leaves, I'm out. And when he said that, of course, Fluky said, if Campbell Locke Jr. and Shabba-Doo are not there, then I'm out. And it really, the group disbanded at that moment. And so I went, after the special, I embarked on a solo career. And I did a number of shows. This was in 1977.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Lockers were only together some 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
Professionally. And I went and pursued a solo career. I did some professional shows with as a soloist with Chuck Kuchaj, producing one of the shows called Dance Class. Did a number of television appearances with him. Then I went on, I got cast in Bette Midler's show, Divine Madness, on Broadway. So I went on Broadway, and I played three characters in her show. I played Hurricane, the Big Noise from Winnetka, and the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from Company C. I was discovered from that show by Steve Allen, the late Steve Allen, who brought me to Nick Vanoff, who was the owner of and operator of the Sunset Gower Studios. Those two men, after my meeting with them, brought me to Brandon Tartikoff. Brandon Tartikoff was the president of NBC. And they gave me my own television series, starring Neil Carter, Graham Chapman, the late Steve Allen, and some other regulars. And we were the last of the variety show era. And I was responsible for choreographing huge production numbers. And I did them in collaboration with David Winters. Well, that fame led to me doing other shows with David Winters, starring in some musicals in San Francisco and so forth. And that set me up to do a documentary, and because I had been known for the guy who discovered the Electric Boogaloo. And they actually gave them their name. I put those boys on. They were part of my crew at one point.
Wow.
And so I did I had an idea for a documentary about the street dance scene in Los Angeles, and I approached Topper Carew. Topper Carew is the executive producer of Martin, who owned a production company called Rainbow Productions. He funded it. He gave me the title of talent coordinator and choreographer, and I was responsible for bringing all the dancers on that documentary called Breaking and Entering, and it was, everybody was the who's who that appeared in the movie Breaking. So it was the prototype for the movie Breaking. So after all of that, leading up to the doorstep of the Breaking movies, I was actually cast in another movie called Body Rock. Well, they took me off the Body Rock movie. They took me off the Body Rock movie, and because they said that they wanted a guy that girls would like. There you go. You know, crestfallen as I was, I found myself having a meeting with Menachem Golan to choreograph a street dance film called Breakin'. Well, of course, I was sitting there in full Shabadoo regalia, earring, everything.
Right.
He knew me from the Lionel Richie video that I choreographed as well, All Night Long, and a whole bunch of other things. And he's like, he looks at me and he said, "Can you act?" And I said, "I'm from Chicago." He said, "Well, you know, Shabadoo from Chicago. Could you go and read for these casting people?" It was Fern Champion and Pamela Basker, I think. They were the casting agents, and I was cast to play Ozone. Although I didn't have acting experience, I had a lot of sense of myself. I knew who I was, and I brought that to the table. I just basically, Ozone is Shabadoo. It's just a different name, but that character was me in real life. You can almost say that it was a reality movie, Michael, you know? So here we are.
Uh-huh.
You know, I do the movie. They bring in Boogaloo Shrimp, who was part of my crew at the time. And when they saw the rapport we had together, the chemistry, they cast both of us as Ozone and Turbo. Now, I have to admit that when I was cast, I was surprised because in the screenplay, the character was written to be an 18 or 19-year-old, and I was like 30 years old playing the kid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was already a grown man playing this teenager in the movie. And as it turns out, you know, they believed it, and the world believed it, and they accepted it. So there you go.
And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. It showcased your talents. I guess probably you can look back and say everything that you did before that led up to that moment for you already.
Oh, absolutely. Unequivocally, yes, I would say that.
Okay. So you did those films, and your career has taken twists and turns since then. What have you been doing since that time? I know something about your workshops. If you'd like, you can talk about some of the workshops that you're giving. And my audience out there, Shabadoo travels the country extensively and overseas. He has master dance workshops, and I'm sure he can fill you out. He has dance workshops for every level. But Shabadoo Ozone is here today with Disco Daddy on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Tell us about what's going on now, Shab.
Well, you know, my career, my life has evolved, and as we all do, I would hope the majority of us do, we evolve into something better. We're always in transition. Hopefully, we're always learning something that will catapult our lives or careers, you know, further. And that's what has happened. In the mid '90s, I entered the school, American Film Institute, and I graduated as a directing fellow in the class of 96. And so I graduated from a postgraduate university that focuses on film and television production. So I have an education in television and film, and I kind of use that now to create the projects that I have on the table. Now I do have a couple of dance films that I've written. And yes, one of them is hopeful to be a Breakin' 3. The other one is a television series that I'm developing with my partner, Domaine Radcliffe, which is a television series based on my life and times and the history growing up here in Los Angeles during the 1970s. I'm also in development with my partner and director and co-writer, Iona Morris, for my one-man show, The King of Crenshaw. And so I'm working on that. I do provide workshops and motivational speaking engagements all over the world to enlighten young people, young neophytes, dancing neophytes, about the finer points of the culture and what the kind of tools they'll need moving forward in order to have a full-fledged career. So I do that. But for the most part, I just always creating something, always involved with creating something. But I tell you, the one thing that brings me more joy than anything, and I'm really excited about my one-man show, The King of Crenshaw, working with Iona Morris, working with Damon Radcliffe, developing my television series, working, getting financing to do a Breaking Three, a real Breaking Three, not the kind of Breaking Three that's been bandied around Facebook, but a real one. And but aside from all of that, which is pretty exciting, I love working with young people. I love young minds. I love young, fresh minds with young, fresh talent. There's nothing that gets me more excited than that. And most important is establishing and deepening my relationship with God. That is my my daily endeavor. How do I deepen my relationship with Jehovah God?
Okay. And are we going to be seeing a book coming from Shabadoo?
Yes, I have my autobiography. My manuscript is due in the next day or so, and so we have a rough one to work out.
And a title for it?
Pardon?
You got a title for it
that
people could look for it?
Yeah, the title of my book is The King of Crenshaw.
The King of Crenshaw. Okay.
Yes.
You definitely are. Tell us about The King of Crenshaw, where that title, because does it have anything to do with Maverick's Flats?
Yes, it does. You know, it's a sort of kind of mythological title. You know, as a young black man growing up in the inner cities of Chicago and also in Los Angeles, and here in Los Angeles where I found this new dance and this camaraderie with fellow dancers, is we all endeavored on some level to rise above our meager surroundings. And there's one place, you know, that we used to hit time and time again, night after night, every weekend, was Crenshaw, was the Crenshaw Strip. You know, we would ultimately wind up at Maverick Flats, but we would also visit and hang out at the apartment club, the Joker Room, the Total Experience, the Summit on the Hill, Blueberry Hill, so all these places were just as important in the big picture, although the centerpiece for us was John Daniels' Maverick Flats. When I was thinking about writing my memoirs and my autobiography, I thought that there couldn't be a better title than what I always hoped and what we had always hoped in our heart was to rise and become the King of Crenshaw. And I said, that's it. That's the title of my book, sir. The King of Crenshaw. It's sort of it's a sort of same idea when people refer to the Kennedys and they call it Camelot and all that sort of thing. Well, for me, for the street dancers of the 1970s, our Camelot was our Camelot, not Camelot, but Camelot was Crenshaw Boulevard, and we all endeavored to be the king of that strip.
And let me inform my audience, Maverick's Flats was a club on, it still exists, it's on Crenshaw Boulevard, it's changed hands as far as owners, but I was a member of the original Soul Train Gang Dance Hall from 73-74. It was one of the party places that we used to accumulate after, during the week, and sometimes for certain members of the gang had birthday parties. And that was our party place there, Crenshaw. I still live a few blocks from there. I still live here in the jungle. So I'm familiar with the lore and the mystique of Crenshaw Boulevard. Yeah, I've been here for 35 years. I was a DJ over here at Big Ben's Records when they were open and everything. All my whole career has been based around Crenshaw also, my brother. Shabadoo, one of the most fascinating, iconic figures in hip-hop. Our guest today on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop, we want to thank you for your contributions to hip-hop. You've contributed more than just to hip-hop. The dance moves and the people that you've inspired and young people all over the world have watched you dance. And let me try a few of these steps out. You've actually made an impact on the world far beyond probably what you can even imagine. So I want to thank you for your time, for your contributions to dance and to hip-hop. And hope to have you back in the future when I do my first television show, Mr. Shabadoo Ozo. Can I call you that? How would you like the world to know you, Shabadoo, or just Shabadoo Ozo?
It's Shabadoo.
Which title?
I like for people to refer to me as Shabadoo. Ozo was a character I played in the movie, but most importantly, my friends just simply call me Shab. And I would like to thank that you're a friend of mine, and all the listeners out there, that may be listening to this program. I would like to think of you as family and friends. So please, when we meet, call me shop.
What advice would you give to young people getting into the business today? You've had all kind of experiences. I understand you still have experiences when you sit down with casting directors or so-called producers. What advice would you give young people today entering this business?
Well, first of all, I said this on Facebook, and so I'll say it here. Dance for something bigger than yourself. Dance for your community. Dance for your people. Dance for your family. Dance for the many black African slaves that have suffered through their sweat, blood, sweat, and tears, and endured a tremendous amount of humiliation in order to pave the way for us to do the things that we do. And also to stay focused. Stay focused on your dreams. Don't allow people to tell you what you can't do.
Okay.
And please keep a level mind. Stay focused. Don't do any drugs. Don't drink. Don't do anything that would prevent you from achieving your higher self.
Okay.
God bless you. If you so choose, please join me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook at Shabadoo. Please visit my website at www.shabadoo.com. That's shabadoo.com. And hit me up on IG, on Instagram, at Shabadoo, one word, Shabadoo, 1972. And let's be friends.
There you go. There you go. Now, do you have any dance workshops coming up? We got about 60 seconds.
I have some dance workshops. I got some dance workshops coming up, which I'm really excited about. It's going to be in Vegas at the end of the month. I just finished Oakland. I love Oakland. I'm going back to Oakland during their Boogaloo Barbecue, and we've got a slate of activities and things we're doing up there in September, so that's exciting. I'll be in Las Vegas at the end of this month, July 28th through the 30th, at Las Vegas. It's being promoted by Watt Soul, Shabadoo.com, Kay over at Prodigy Center and Stingray. We've got an old schooler out there in Las Vegas that is, helping to organize everything. And I'm just, so I have that. And then we're looking at, the Lockers are being inducted into the Hip Hop Hall of Fame in New York on September 15th.
Wow.
So that's on the horizon. I achieved the Universal Hip Hop Museum's Lifetime Achievement Award that you were so gracious to give me with your partners and other ranking officials in the University of Hip Hop.
There was nobody more deserving. Okay. And
it was beautiful.
Give you that. All right. And the people turned out.
It was
people
beautiful.
Still love you, Shop. You know what I'm saying? So
I feel it all over the world.
We're glad.
I feel it all over the world, and I'm humbled by it, man. Really am.
Well, you got more stuff coming. Hopefully you'll have an academy up there one day, too, on your shelf. Okay?
Why not?
You know what I'm saying? Dream big. Dreams do come true.
I'm ready.
Okay. Shabadoo Ozone.
I'm going to let you help me write my speech.
Hey, you can call me anytime, my brother. You've contributed time to my endeavors. Any projects you got, Disco Daddy's, there for you. Don't have to be no money at all. Peace.
Well, thank you for the love.
You know that, my brother. It's always going to be there. Shabadoo Ozone with Disco Daddy on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop.
So wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic. See you next week. Bye.